The two largest private prison companies in the nation say their stock saw their stock rise by double digits after President Trump took office. One of those is the GEO Group. It operates three prisons in Georgia and opened a new facility in January to detain immigrants near Folkston, Georgia. George Zoli heads the GEO Group.
In order to continue to be in a position to meet what is expected to be increased demand for detention capacity at the federal level, we also recently acquired the 688-bed Maverick County Detention Center in Texas for approximately $15 million.
Here to talk about this is John Eason. He's an assistant professor at Texas A&M University and author of the book Big House on the Prairie. John, it's good to have you here.
Good to be with you, Celeste. Thanks for having me.
And also, Patrick Michaels is a reporter with Reveal, which is produced by the Center for Investigative Reporting. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, good morning.
Now, John, you, for your research, moved your whole family to Arkansas, correct?
Yes.
How long did you live there?
About a year, a little over a year.
And you moved there because you went to a rural area where a prison was sort of the center of that town. What prison was it?
It was the Forest City Federal Correctional Facility. They had built it in 1997. We went 10 years later, about 10 years later, for my dissertation research.
Now, here's the thing that's a little bit complicated, and I'll bring you into this as well, Patrick, because when we talk about prisons, there's a lot of different kinds of prisons, and what happens in them can also be very different. In other words, there are federal prisons, there are state prisons, there are local jails, and then even among federal prisons and state prisons, there's those that are operated by the government and those that are operated by private companies. John, how different between all those different kinds of facilities, how different can it be inside?
It can be very different. There's the image of the low security or minimum security federal prison as a club fed. There is some truth to that, but all prisons have, they're not good places. You really don't want to visit them. You definitely don't want to be in them. I had the chance to visit the Forest City Correctional Facility with the Mayor Pro Tem and nearly got arrested. But that's a whole other that would take up your entire show. So.
Well, don't want to do that, but I should mention again, the book is called Big House on the Prairie. So, Patrick, let's bring you into this because your investigation focused on immigration facilities, correct?
Sure, that's right. In immigration facilities, even among prisons in general, there are four separate sets of standards that the federal government has that facilities have to adhere to. And they're each, for private facilities, they're all run on separate contracts. So it really kind of runs the gamut, whether you're talking about family detention or, short-term detention, long-term detention, new facilities, old facilities, they've all got separate sorts of standards that they have to follow.
So let's hear from George Zoli again. He's the head of the GEO Group, and he is talking about the long history his company has of working with the federal government to house people who are detained on immigration charges. Here he is speaking during a public shareholder call earlier this month.
We are pleased to have been able to build on our partnership with ICE, which dates back three decades to 1986 and has helped the agency provide high-quality services in safe, humane, and culturally responsive environments pursuant to the federal government's performance-based national detention standards.
Now, there is a new facility operated by the GEO Group going up near Folkston, as I mentioned, and Georgia already has the largest immigrant detention facility. Patrick, what did you find at these immigrant detention facilities that may be surprising to the average listener?
Well, I think for one thing, the company will always talk about its three-decade relationship with the federal government and its commitment to following standards of care and making things safe, updating facilities that maybe had gotten old. Across the country, you'll see lawsuits and complaints of horrific sorts of things and, sexual assaults, deaths that were preventable. you know, there were riots in Texas at one facility, you know, two separate riots causing millions of dollars in damage. That, you know, even the towns that had built these facilities and were excited about the revenue coming in start to worry about kind of what they've gotten into in a lot of cases. There's a recent class action lawsuit in Denver where the folks there said that they've been working basically like in a prison camp sort of environment under a volunteer work program that the GEO Group is running. And these are folks that could be paroled, you know, given, you know, under the discretion of ICE, basically, that, you know, it's the decision whether to keep them in detention or let them sort of wait for their court date out in the community. Lately, the decision has been keep them locked up in facilities like this.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Patrick Michaels. He's a reporter with Reveal, produced by the Center for Investigative Reporting, and also Texas A&M University Assistant Professor John Eason. I want to read a portion of a statement we did get from the GEO Group, which is, quote, "We're proud of our longstanding record providing high-quality culturally responsive services in safe, secure, and humane environments, including around-the-clock medical care pursuant to the federal government's performance-based national detention standards and guidelines." John, this brings us back to you because Patrick is talking about the towns that end up welcoming these prisons. I want to listen to Russell Beatty. He's the director of the Main Street Chamber of Leak County. That is where the Walnut Grove Youth Correctional Facility once operated in Mississippi. And here was him describing the prospect of welcoming the prison.
I will say that at first, residents didn't want a prison. You think about a prison and I don't know if we want that in our backyard, but they begin to accept it. But as the plants close and as things have changed, it needed that boost.
So then before I get to you, John, let me play one more comment. And this is Jody Owens of the Southern Poverty Law Center. And he's describing some of the problems that ended up occurring at the Walnut Grove Youth Correctional Facility.
People were being extorted. People were being raped, sexual assault. People were being left alone when they committed to hurting themselves and subsequently did take their own lives. So what we did as a result was launch an investigation internally. And once we got into place, we couldn't leave. Everyone had something to tell us about what was happening in this hellhole.
John, this intersection of towns, especially towns that want the money and jobs that a prison can bring and yet may not like what happens at this prison, that's your area of expertise, is it not?
That is. I did want to add one thing to the discussion of standards in detention facilities. Between 07 and 09, we have FOIA data. I'm working on another project. And there were 48 facilities, public and private, that didn't meet the standards. Once they changed the standards, the feds, there was only one facility between 2010 and 2012 that didn't
meet the
standards.
What are you saying? They lowered the standards?
They changed them. I'm sure they lowered them in some ways. They basically did away with them. So the GEO Group, that statement being made by the GEO Group, I find very problematic because they have created conditions in detention facilities which lead to increased deaths and increased suicides and attempted suicides. We have data. We're in the process of trying to get this published. But going back to what I'm really on this show about, the conditions inside any of these facilities are going to be pretty terrible. The thing is, towns don't, typically prisons are on the outside of the town. You have to actually, if you're looking at rural communities, you often have to take a service road to get there. In my case, it was about 4 miles outside of town. So sort of out of sight, out of mind. And folks who are in a bad position, town leaders who typically make these decisions to go and get a prison, I found both black and white leaders in the town for a city. And I think for a city is more of a prototypical prison town because the percentage of African Americans in a town that gets a prison is higher than the average town. So there were both black and white people that wanted this prison. The head of the NAACP, in my case, actually advocated for it, even though they talked about the trouble with mass imprisonment and racial disproportionate minority contact. So.
Patrick, let me get back to you for the last 2 minutes that we have. We're seeing a decrease in the number of people being detained. That may not be true for those who are violating immigration law. But why are we still seeing such a boom in the building of prisons, do you think?
Yeah, well, so last year, the federal government was talking about moving away from private prisons. And a lot of the reason for that was that the Bureau of Prisons, the federal inmate population, had been declining for a while. Immigrant detention is an opportunity for these private detention companies to grow their business. And basically, it's even though apprehensions on the border are way down, the Trump administration is really ramping up sort of internal arrests. I think it's up 35% over last year. And there's a huge backlog of cases waiting to go before judges. So if they're not getting paroled, they have to be kept somewhere, and that's creating this huge demand. It seems like it's just going to be increasing. And the company knows that, and they shared that with their shareholders as well. And one quick thing as well, they're talking about moving these facilities closer to cities, sort of in recognition that that's where they're going to be finding folks that they're going to need to lock up.
That's Patrick Michaels. He's a reporter with Reveal, produced by the Center for Investigative Reporting. We also spoke with Texas A&M University Assistant Professor John Eason. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.